Hello and welcome to Glimmer of Genius. This is a podcast all about Magic the Gathering, bringing you the latest happenings in the MTG community, from news to tournament reports, deck ideas to MTG finance. We are Glimmer of Genius. If you want to learn more about the show, then check us out on Facebook at Glimmer of Genius. Leave a comment or a question. It lets us know you like what you hear, and it's a great way for you to support the show. My name's Luke Vincent, and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David and MTG trader Simon Wright. Here we are for episode 20. On the show this week, we're going to talk a little bit about the Pro Tour, as well as Simon's experiences with GP London, and Grant has a particularly spicy brew for us. But before all of that, Grant, what have you been up to this week in Magic?
So, I haven't really played Magic for, I think it was like a modern event, but yeah, as of last week, I played in a modern event using the 5-colour human deck, which I'd found about a month ago and built, and as of me saying this, apparently it's been doing quite well in the Pro Tour, which is interesting. So I saw it and knew it was going to be strong, but it always seemed to me as like kind of a bit of a weird, like, I don't know, not unusual deck, but something you wouldn't see at the top of. But then if I'm correct in saying apparently the decks that make game day two, the biggest similarity was the 5-colour humans was the most popular one.
Yeah.
And we were talking a bit about, like, you know, the differences and stuff, and there's some random uncommons that I might want to put in my one kind of thing, because it is a lot of fun and it's pretty simple. And although it's quite expensive, I think it's probably a deck I'd probably lend people if they wanted to play some modern, because you don't really care about colours, it's just the lands tap for whatever you want them to.
Yeah.
So that's quite fun. I recently played in a standard showdown, and that was using a deck that I found again online about a month ago, which was blue-white tokens, so revolves around a lot of the cats that obviously come back as tokens, obviously Regal Caracal that makes cats and obviously makes the other ones bigger. And then one of my favourite cards I always wanted to find a use for, which was Avon Windguide from Amonkhet, which is creature tokens have flying and vigilance.
Yep.
And there was some ludicrous situations where, like, my eternalised Adorned Pouncer, which of course is normally a 1-1 double strike, comes back to 4-4 double strike, it was getting a bonus from the Regal Caracal and the Avon Windguide, so I hit someone in the air with a 5-5 double strike lifelink vigilance cat, which was just ridiculous. And then also the list had, you know, these cards, and it was fine. You know, the mana curve was like 1-2, then not really much, and then it went up to Regal Caracal, and that was it. And I was like, why is this deck not running Crested Sun? Because it had like stuff like Anointed Priest, even that, like, you know, literally gives you life for no real purpose.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, okay, well, just slam three of those in. And then there were situations where I was playing someone where obviously I knew I was going to attack with a lifelinking cat to get a horse, but then they attacked in my in their turn. Obviously, I blocked with a cat, or even if I made a token, I would have gotten a game life as well from Anointed Priest. And then obviously, if you're not familiar with the wording on Crested Sun, it's at the end of each end step, not the end of your end step.
Wow.
So it's making two horses. So I was like, attack for 5. Cool. Jeez. Then when it comes back to my turn, attack for 15. And that was for the win as well, because, I mean, you know, she knew the pressure was on that stage, but it was for the win as well, because then it got to my turn, drew an Avon Windguide, played that, and of course it went from 5 damage on the ground to 15 damage in the air. So, yeah. But yeah, so I'm going to another standard showdown this evening, and I'm going to use that deck again, because it's a lot of fun. But yeah, I think I was a bit disenfranchised with, not so much modern, but I kind of got a bit bored, and I think most people were bored with modern as well. And now that it's varied, I think it might be more fun and more accessible to play modern, I think. And similar with standard as well, you know, it's just energy or Ramunap red, and I just couldn't be asked to really, I didn't want to play either of those. I couldn't really offer to try and go up against them.
That's fair enough.
And now that, you know, again, you could talk about, you know, bans and controversy and stuff, but as a result of that, of course, the standards meta is a bit more varied, and there's some, I think, some interesting decks that will come out of it. So yeah, I think I'll be playing Magic at least once a week for the foreseeable future, because I've had a bit of a break, which, you know, for different reasons, but it'd be nice to play regularly again. So
yeah, definitely. I think now's definitely a good time, it feels like, for that. What's the Avon guy that gives you tokens stuff. I think now's a really good time for him, especially in like token mirrors. It's just a way to basically kind of Alpha Strike and a Mirror Breaker, really. Unless they're using some other piece of sideboard tech that I'm unaware of. But yeah, I really like that card, and it's nice to see it actually be used, because it's very powerful what it does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, just flying tokens is cool, but given that we're in a format that you can have 5/5 flying tokens that are also indestructible, it's crazy. And, you know, the opponent was just like, okay, Fumigate, it's like, cool, I'll lose six creatures, but keep two indestructible horses, you know, obviously they're not indestructible after they get killed, but of course the Wrath Effect only kills the Crest of Sun men, not tokens, and it's just like, yeah. If you're making yourself immune to board wipe, that's quite a rare thing to find in standard, so that's just crazy.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine that being a nightmare for like approach decks, or you know, if they don't have the settle, then that's a pain in the ass to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that's it for standard at the moment for me.
That's cool. And Simon, what about yourself? Obviously, you had the GP, but what else have you been up to with Magic?
So a lot of stuff we've had pre-release, middle of standard showdowns and league. It's quite fun. But my main event was GP London. It was 2 weekends ago now, which was great fun. I say fun. It's probably the one I've enjoyed the most, and it's the one I've done the worst at for a long time. I went 2-3 by round 5, so that was me out of contention for day 2. So I got to enjoy playing side events on Sunday, which was quite nice.
Yep.
We sort of stayed up till 1 o'clock in the morning the night before drafting Khan's Fate Reforged.
Ooh.
And getting quite drunk. So I probably wasn't on top form. Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one, because I was tempted not to do the main event, just because of the price increase and getting rid of the playmats and stuff. But then after I looked at the side events, have you seen the schedules? I guess you're not interested this year, because you're not going to go to any. Highly doubtful you are.
Do you mean the schedules in general, or do you mean...
Yeah, well, the main events, the main side events, it's just like, it's all standard, most of it's standardised now, and it's 3 rounds, these are the prizes you get per win, or per score. Some events were double up, which was great, then, you have to pay more for them anyway, so it's not really doubling up.
No.
Unless you get the season, you know, package tickets. But yeah, so it's 3 rounds instead of 4, price is the same, less tickets, so you're paying the same amount of money, for less magic and less rewards. And apparently it was a good thing, because it meant people could fit in more events, because the problem was that they couldn't fit in all the events in a package because 4 rounds was too much or something. Which is, okay, it's fine then, charge them less for the entrance fee.
Yeah,
so I was a bit annoyed with that. But also, doing the side events is really, because there were only 3 rounds, and by the time you get to the 3rd round, everyone wants to ID and get the tickets and just move on. So you're paying for 2 rounds of magic.
Yeah.
On the Sunday, I'd done a sealed event, double prize money. So it was like £35 to enter instead of £20. Well, I went 1-1 and then got into round 3. And my opponent was like, do you want an ID? I was like, no. I don't want to pay £35 for 2 rounds of magic. And he was like, oh, but you know, if we split the prizes, it's a lot better than if one of us goes without. I'm like, yeah, I get that, but I want to play some magic.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at the shop a lot, but I don't get to play much. Well, I do get to play sometimes, but you know, not as much as I'd like. So when I'm there on a business trip, /holiday. I wanted to play. So I was like, yeah, I'll play. And then he was like, oh, do you want to split prizes anyway? So I'm like, oh, my deck's really good. So I didn't really want to, but I did it because, you know, I'm not interested in the prize wall. There's mostly just, I don't know why people get so excited. I've never seen anything that good on there.
Nope.
When I ever go there, I like to pick up slightly older boosters the next Chaos Draft I do.
Yeah.
But all the ones that are slightly older are way overpriced and usually French. Why am I... Yeah, I don't know. But I was like, okay, fine. But you sort of have to ID at the end anyway. Because imagine your opponent didn't. Yeah, cause at the end, you have to go up together to the ticket booth and get your reward.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's quite a big queue. So imagine if, you know, your opponent really wanted to ID and you're like, no thanks, mate. And then you smashed him. That's a really awkward 10-minute queue you might have, especially if they're really salty about it.
Yeah, I felt that. I didn't really notice it so much with the other GP that I did recently because I wasn't really doing that many side events because I just found them so extortionate anyway. But yeah, fortunately, I didn't have that whole queue issue or anything like that. But it does feel the whole system is pretty crap. Like you say, what you're getting, what you're paying, and then the experience afterwards is just awful. Like,
yeah, I mean, I did have fun. The people I met on the side events were very nice. I had a great time. All I've done was that I've done that event, and then after that I played a Chaos Sealed event. It was a bit pricey, it was like £40, but I was on holiday. I was like, oh, I've never actually done a Chaos Sealed before. I've done draft before, but never Chaos Sealed. I thought, I'll give that a go. But it was weird, it wasn't sealed. I expect to receive 6 booster packs.
Yeah.
I think they've obviously, either it's a way to get rid of other product, or I've realised actually 6 random boosters can be quite tough.
Yep.
Because it's not like a draft where you can pick, you know, cards in certain colours. So you only get 3 packs and then a tournament deck. But I was really worried about just getting absolute chaff, because I heard my friend enter a Chaos draft and he got M14, M15, and Theros.
Yeah.
For £15, you know, is it 20 quid? No. You'd expect they just to, like, guarantee at least one okayish booster.
Yeah.
when I do the character drafts at the shop, I sort of make sure like everyone rolls randomly for one good one out of however many players we've got, and then the rest are just randomised, so you get two mediocre ones, one, you know, fairly decent one, just to make it worth the effort. But no, so I played, so I was a bit worried, but I got a Mirrodin tournament deck box, so I thought, oh, that's great, loads of artifacts, usually colourless.
Yep.
Winner. And I also got a pack of Mirrodin Besiege booster with it, and Masqueradian Masks, and Theros. So I was like, actually, you know, that's not too bad.
No.
I don't think I've ever opened a pack of Mirrodin or Masqueradian Masks before. Or Mirrodin, I've opened Mirrodin Besiege, actually, but yeah. So I was quite chuffed with that, and I was really hoping for some real good shenanigans between Mirrodin and Mirrodin Besiege.
Yeah.
But I didn't get any. No. Actually, I was really just hoping for a Consecrated Sphinx. Or a Worm Calling. There was loads of good stuff I could open. I opened a Mere Reservoir.
No.
Which isn't worth anything, but I'll tell you what. All my games I won was off of Mere Reservoir. Good stuff. But yeah, so I played that event, and I was 2-0 going to the final round. And because it was the end of Sunday as well, like everyone around was like, should we ID go get our tickets before the queue gets too big, get some prizes? They're like, yeah. I'm like, I think it's 40 quid. And you just played 20 quid per round of Magic. You just got up and left.
Mm.
They all just said, tickets. And my opponent, because I said to my opponent, do you want to ID? He went, no. I've only played old school Magic yesterday. This is my actual only event I'm playing this weekend. I want to play. I went, yes, good. I went, are you wanting to split prizes? He went, no, I want to win. I went, yes, this is my friend. Unfortunately, he beat me and he wasn't my friend. And then we had awkward silence in the queue for 10 minutes with me being salty. But no, it wasn't actually. It was a good game. I quite enjoyed it. But I had a great time playing the KFC. It was great fun.
It's nice to actually play it through. Like, it's frustrating.
No, literally. There was even an announcement on the Saturday, I think, where it was like, because of course some people have constructive packages, some people have the limited packages. And there was even an announcement going, oh, this lot in this tournament, like, it's the final round. If you want to leave now, you've got 10 minutes to join the next one. And, like, literally 90% of the field got up and left.
Wow.
It's like, GP is supposed to be like a fun time to play Magic, not just to grind tickets. But I just remember older GPs like missing out all the side events and seeing some awesome stuff, like your sealed deck that was just a random box that you have to build your deck from, like a random box across time of Magic. There's like nothing really like that anymore.
No.
It just seemed very uniformed and get people in and out and into as much as they can and just get their money.
Yeah. Sadly, I think that's exactly what they're trying to achieve. I think the system they've currently got is really good at doing that.
I think the constructed pack, if I played more constructed Magic, it might be interesting because you could get a pack of six, but you could play standard, modern, legacy, pauper, vintage maybe, don't know. But you had quite a nice choice of what you wanted to play.
Okay.
They do try and time it so that you count, that's what, hence the dropping to three rounds, so you can finish one and sign up for like the one that's about to fire. So there is some thought in it, but yeah, it just didn't have the same usual magical feel.
No.
Oh, I didn't say about the good thing about playing the GP though, even though it was 70 quid with no bloody playmat, is your deck was pre-registered. You're given a box, boosters unopened, and a bit of paper with your deck list already recorded.
That's pretty sweet.
And you just marked off as you went. And it saved like an hour.
Yeah.
Player registration meeting was 9, and we were definitely starting round one by 10 o'clock. And that was even with a 15-minute break.
Oh, wow.
It started on almost bang 10 o'clock. It was great.
So 9 o'clock, player meeting, build your pool, break, 10 o'clock start.
Yeah, it was great. It was worth the extra 10 quid, but I didn't get a playmat, so I guess it actually cost me probably 25 quid. It's not worth 25 quid.
No.
How much to buy the playmat? 12 quid. So 22 quid. An extra tenner plus 12 quid. 22 quid. No, it wasn't worth that. It was worth a tenner.
Oh, well.
And I think you didn't get any sleeves this time either.
That's a joke.
I know. That was one of the best bits of sleeves. Apparently because their sleeves weren't good enough, but I don't know.
Actually, Channel Fireball sleeves are terrible.
Well, yeah, no, that wasn't their official announcement, but apparently, that was a summary of the play. It's like, well, their sleeves aren't good enough, so what's the point in giving us sleeves that aren't going to hold up for a day of shuffling?
Yeah. No, I've seen people been pulled up by judges and they're like, these were the sleeves that I've been provided and like, you're giving me like game losses or whatever for so mark
that,
cards.
That might be why they had to stop doing that then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be fuming.
It was embarrassing.
I would be absolutely fuming.
Yeah, but tell you what, deck registration already done for, sealed pool already registered for you, awesome.
Yeah.
No, because it also meant, every bloody GP I've played, like, usually, because I need to do the sealed ones. I'm there, counting all my cards, counting whoever's going to get this pool out of cards, put it all in alphabetical order, sort them all out, boom, done. And then it gets passed around and you get back a pile of shit.
Yeah.
Not all, like, it's like some crazy person just like chucking stuff together, and you have to start sorting it out before you can even tick it off your list. Actually, I think some players do it properly and just shuffle the cards together and spit on it. Pass
it on. You can see the people doing it. They're cogitating it.
Where do I go?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that is a plus point for sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I sat down and I was pleased. I was happy with that. In my hungover state, just going, smiling slightly, just going, yes. Things are improving until you get to the side events. Oh, I just say, I did enjoy my GP experience.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I did have a good time. There's a big request from the shop when they had a great time as well.
Yeah.
So it was good to see people up there and enjoying it.
As for myself then, I sadly wasn't able to go to the GP as I've got to be on standby for baby at any moment, which is fine. Yeah. Which she could be here at any time. So going to London for the weekend wasn't really very, very clever. The stuff that I've done recently with Magic would be the standard showdown at Dice Saloon this weekend just gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
I was there.
Yes. It's a shame that you weren't able to play, but I was, and I took Esper Approach of the Second Sun deck, which is basically an Esper control deck, which wins with that and potentially Torrential Gearhulks. I lost the first round, but then won the next two. Lost to Grixis mid-range in the first round, which is really quite interesting deck. There's a lot of like everything they play is like value.
Yeah.
And then beat Mardu Vehicles. It's quite amusing because I fatal pushed a Bomat Courier straight away. And I was thinking, I just don't want that to get more cards under it. And I don't want to take the damage. But as soon as I did it, Kerry sort of like slunk in her in her seat. And I was like, it's only a Bomat Courier. What the hell? And then I realized that she needed the artifact in play to activate her Spire of Industry. So she then didn't, unfortunately, get the colours of mana she needed, and then I was able just to sit there and amass cards. Poor Kerry, really, by the time she played anything relevant, I was just sitting on the slough she knew I had, because she had duressed me, like, the second turn, and that was it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so it wasn't the nicest way to win, really, but unfortunately, it's the way it goes sometimes. And can't remember who I played in the second round, but it was... No, it was gone. But yeah, it was a really nice, fun tournament to do. And it was good to see a lot of people from the shop that I wouldn't have necessarily expected to be bringing competitive decks.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think we had 14 players, which I think is probably one of our highest turnouts for Australia. We usually get around 8, maybe 10. But yeah, we pushed it by putting some extra... So basically we get extra prizes for whoever does overall the best over all 4 weeks. And it's like 25... in credit for the first place, 15 for second, third for 10, so just keeps people interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good to turn it. And also, a lot more, because of course now there's prizes, a lot more competitive players turn up. Exactly. Hopefully that won't put off some of the more casual players.
I don't think so. I think...
It's a hard back, but that's the thing, I can always give out the showdown boosters.
Yeah, if you're doing the prizes so top heavy, the showdown boosters, the people that are going to be competitive aren't there for the showdown boosters, so you can just distribute them to the people that you want to distribute them to.
I don't know if the prizes are 2-2. It's pack the win normally, isn't it?
But I don't mean that. I mean, like, you know, they're there for those prizes, not the showdown boosters. Like, if you're putting something as good as that at the top end, that's what people are going to shoot for. And then it's the showdown boosters are just a nice little bonus,
I want the showdown boosters for my next Chaos Draft. They're really fun.
How does that work in a Chaos Draft?
Well, because I kept all my winnings from the last one, so I think I had, what did I have? I had Aether Revolt, Amonkhet, and Hour of Devastation, but I had like 4 or 5 of each, so I just put 4 and like made them as one pack.
Well, that's cool.
And then, yeah, so but it was great, it was awesome, because of course people were going, oh, I've got loads of rares to go, and like, but then like there's full art foil land just going around the table. No one's scooping up. No, there's a lot of better stuff to take. So that's really, of course, it makes everyone's decks a bit more powerful because there's a few more extra rares in there. So it's quite interesting.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. It's a shame I didn't save a few more, actually. Or win a few more.
Yeah.
I haven't got any yet for Rivals because I didn't play.
No. Okay.
Pretty good I didn't play because I've just got a janky dinosaur deck.
I don't know. Dinosaurs are pretty beefy. I played against someone with a dinosaur deck online. They managed to get... I think it was something stupid like 6 lands out of their deck from Ranging Raptors.
Oh, I don't play him. No, I don't play good ones. I've got gods in there as well. It's sort of a weird. It's probably more like green red monsters, maybe. Not much interaction with other players.
You don't need to interact with other players.
I try not to.
The other thing that happened recently was Pro Tour. Only just a few days ago, in fact, it was Modern. And though we want to go into too much detail on the deck lists, I mean, the top eight, there's some interesting stuff in there. I mean, there's the sort of stuff that isn't that new. So you've got a Death Shadow deck, sort of going a bit more old style of like Mishra's Baubles, Tarmogoyfs, and Traverse the Even Worlds. Then you've got Five Color Humans, an Abzan deck. You've got a couple of Pyromancer decks, which are quite interesting, basically utilising young Pyromancer, one being straight blue-red with Thing in the Ice, and the other one being Jerry Thompson's Mardu sort of build. And the things that have been sort of floating around, I've seen Mardu-style decks utilising instants and sorceries quite a bit in young Pyromancer, but this is the first time I've seen, or that I can remember, that they're putting up like really good results.
I saw the Hollow one when it's first like coming out of the blocks. Humans as well have been making progress. I haven't really been following the Pyromancer ones. Lantern Control's an obvious one. But what I was most shocked off with this top eight, well, it's quite diverse, which is nice, but it is Modern, which is usually more diverse. But there's no in the top eight, there's no Affinity, no Tron, no Red Deck Wings, none of the format staples.
Well,
that you'd expect to see there.
Abzan's there. That one is pretty much just like, it's like Jund, but white instead of red.
Okay.
So like, if you can imagine Jund, but Abzan.
So not Jund, okay.
Yeah.
Is Traverse Shadow much different to normal Death Shadow decks lately? It's got Tarmogoyfs too.
Yeah, so basically this is an older version of what you see in Death Shadow. It's playing cards like Traverse the Even World, because obviously you can just get Death Shadow, and Delirium's not hard to achieve. Death Shadow being as Death Shadow as it can possibly be, because you'd normally, like in the past, you see like a more Jund version of Death Shadow with the main deck sort of configuration of like the Jundy colours. Whereas this one's going full on four colour with the blue for Snapcaster Mage and Stubborn Denial. If you look in the sideboard, it's got one Godless Shrine and three Lingering Souls.
Yeah.
Which then make the two Marsh Flats in the main deck make a lot more sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's really kind of pushing how far the mana base will go. And it's interesting. So it's kind of a big mix of a lot of the cards that you could put in a Death Shadow deck. Almost saying, actually, you know what? I'm just going to go with the best cards that I can literally shove into this deck and go with that. Yeah. I mean, it's got, like you said, the Tarmogoyfs, the Baubles, Liliana's. I mean, it's quite cool.
I think it's just interesting that, like, if you'd looked at a top eight 2 years ago for Modern, it's like, was it 2 years? Even maybe a year ago, actually. These decks would not be in.
Well, Death Shadow might have been, but
maybe and Jun sort of, but yeah, but you know, it would be full of Affinity, Tron, Boggles, Infect. so it's like, I know those Splinter Twin obviously banned now, hence that. But you know, there was nothing. Boggles and Infect are just gone.
Yeah.
Really? They're not around anymore. You've got, but Affinity and Tron are still very big, very big decks.
Yeah.
So to see them not in there is very, for me, a surprise. I don't follow much Modern, especially Modern tournaments. Like, I check to see what's doing well and at what price wise. But, you know, I pay attention to Pro Tours because they do affect prices quite dramatically.
Yeah.
So for me, this was quite, they stopped doing Modern Pro Tours, didn't they, for a while?
Yeah, and then they brought them back.
Yeah, this was the first one for a while. So for me to see such a change in the top decks was quite mind-blowing, actually. I was like really excited, actually. I was actually looking at the decks for the first time going, what if I put some of these together? I might as well do this Traverse Shadow one because no one's buying my Tarmogoyfs.
Yeah. It's interesting, Grant said as well, was Modern so diverse that it might well be that Affinity or Tron could easily have made top eight in this event, but just didn't get there. I don't think that any of those decks are necessarily on a downturn.
No. Sorry, that's not what I meant at all. No, it's just surprising that none of them were in the top.
Oh, yeah, totally. But I guess if you start adding up the sort of decks you could conceivably imagine to make top eight, they'd be good enough to make top eight. It's actually quite a lot now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, some of them, you know, just on the maths of it, aren't going to always make it in there. But no, it's an interesting point. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, actually, as well, was Lantern Control. So, So I'm guessing I can guess your sort of feelings on it initially as well. But
if a deck name has control in it, I don't really like it. Like, if you can guarantee it, I'll probably instantly hate it.
So Lands and Control, it is what it is, and there's been a lot of Twitter stuff that I've seen, and there's been articles written recently basically saying A, should Lands and Control be banned, arguments for and against it, and people's general feelings towards a deck like this even existing in our beloved game. So I just wonder what your thoughts
get it
on
out.
That. Yeah.
What are my thoughts?
Yeah, just on like Lance, it's won the Pro Tour. Like, and if you'd sat through the match, would you realistically have been sitting there thinking, oh, this is great Magic to watch?
There's the issue where no Magic is that great to watch, is it? That's the issue. That's the issue we have with getting more viewers. It's some games are great and really. Did you see the commentator for the new Pro Tour for this Pro Tour?
No.
Oh, he was great. He was. He seemed like a proper like sports commentator, you know, that could talk forever without pausing just to like keep people interested. I can't remember who this co-commentator was, but it was a Channel Fireball guy, and he barely got a word in. And he usually talks a lot on the shows. But yeah, I don't know if they just. He might be actually someone quite famous in the Magic world, I wouldn't know. But he just went on and on and on. Filled like, and there was no dead air. He was just at it. I think they brought him in deliberately just to spice it up a little bit.
Wow. That's good.
So I went a bit off track there. I'm trying to think of an answer to your question.
Ron, I'd be interested to hear what you think about Lantern Control.
Interesting, actually. I was literally having a conversation with someone at work, funnily enough, who I got into Magic. And he was talking to with his local play group about... He literally said at work today, he was like, Grant, random question. As a judge, what are your views on slow play? I said, well, that's quite a big question. Mm-hmm. I said, you're going to give me some context. This is Lantern Control. I said, okay, cool. I know what you're talking about now. But for those of you that don't know, slow play is a penalty that you can get in tournaments. And I told this guy at work, kind of like the really general sort of sweeping discussions about it, or things like rules of thumb almost, but that I wouldn't really use that because, again, it's very contextual. But one of them I said to him was basically, if the game state or the board state is advancing, it's very difficult to give someone a penalty for slow play. So if you look at a Lantern Control match going on, like a lot of stuff that's going on, stuff is happening, like stuff's milling, stuff's going very good, stuff's coming back, whatever. But of course, nothing's really progressing. But that's fine. Like, that's obviously the way the deck works. And I said to this guy, like, as an example, say if, you know, the opponent just needed to mill something or play something, and it was fairly obvious, but took like 2 minutes over it, obviously that's slow play. But then if it is like he's obviously thinking about what this card could do or whatever, and then he needs to think about what artifacts are tapped to do what, again, it's an extremely thought heavy deck. So it's kind of difficult to give slow play penalties about over Lantern Control with that kind of thing, you know, where arguably they are doing something. So in terms of from a judge perspective, if Lantern Control became quite common, it would be a bit frustrating in terms of tournaments would often be as a time or whatever. But ultimately, unless they change some of the rules revolving around that, I think it's difficult to enforce, you know, stop playing slow decks kind of thing. That's just the way the meta goes. In terms of like the actual deck itself and it being popular, that's like a more interesting discussion as well. In terms of like, oh, you know, it's a really like boring deck, or, you know, quite subjective stuff. And to be fair, I'm of the same opinion. I don't see why anyone would want to play the deck. It just seems just awful. And when I've played someone playing Lantern Control, each time I've won, it's because they've made a very simple mistake.
Yep.
And I just don't think it's worth the hassle. Like, I don't see why people would want to go to a tournament and be even more exhausted from playing that deck.
Yeah.
And just would frankly just lose against decks like homebrew decks where they don't know what the deck is kind of thing. So in terms of like whether it should be allowed to be a thing, like, I don't think you can say, oh, it's a boring deck, therefore it's banned. But I think banning cards is not a way to progress with this because it's not broken. I think the way this needs to be combated, as it were, is by basically either sideboarding harder against it, because that's not exactly difficult, it's not like it's very niche, or just make more unique decks. I think the reason why it's becoming competitive, as it were, is because net decking is a thing. It's basically all you see at the top eight for any tournament. So if people were to make their own unique decks, I think it would suffer as a result of that. So although it kind of sucks that it's a boring deck, I kind of like that it's putting this almost like selection pressure on people to be a bit different, to fight it back, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. It's just an interesting way of looking at it, because there's a lot of like mixed opinion on whether it is just broken or not broken. Like, a lot of people think Yeah, a lot of people just don't like it's. I don't know how much it's kind of hyperbolic or just a bit of a cliche, but a lot of people have I've spoken to about this, basically saying, "Oh, it is just the best deck in Modern," but because of the skill gap between those that do well with it and those that just sort of try it out and then give up, it doesn't put up the same results as something like, I don't know, Fairies would have done back in Standard, or even I don't know, Miracles in Legacy before that got banned. Like, it just wasn't able to kind of put those numbers up because of the style of deck it is, and so it's hard to actually, the reason it might not be banned at the moment is because we've actually got this unusual sort of situation where we do have the best deck in Modern, and it is defined as Lands of Control. However, because of that, you know, the error that happens when using it a lot of the time, you don't often see it actually do well, which I don't know how much of that I believe. It's just interesting to hear your thoughts on it. I don't know. I don't think it's... I do agree with you, though. I don't think it's the right precedent to set to ban something because people don't like it.
It's an interesting deck. So the things I've heard comment about was it's totally different to any other deck. How you play it is different to any other Magic. You have to sort of unlearn everything you know about Magic in order to succeed with this deck, about when you're the attacker, when you're the defender, when you're behind on the ball, when you're ahead. And it's not like any other deck. And they said that it is the best deck in Modern. However, due to its play style, it might never be the most popular, which sort of means it won't get banned. Decks only get banned on that if they're dominant, as in they take up a large portion of the meta, so that if you are watching a Pro Tour or a GP, all you have is mirror matches most of the time, and the top eight is made up of six decks of that's literally card for card. Only then is it like, no, we have to get rid of it. That's what they try to avoid. Boring. I couldn't imagine watching a mirror match of this. I hope they never aired one.
Yeah,
that'd just be horrific.
I think they'd know better.
Yeah.
Than to do that.
That's the thing, though. When they do pick matches, sometimes it's not the top games that are being broadcast. It's the ones they think will be the most entertaining, or deck that aren't as well known. Well, maybe not as well known, but aren't as popular, just to get more people seeing different decks. Yeah, they do cherry pick the matches they want to be played. It's not always the top tables.
No,
they match people up. They see what pairings are on, what decks are playing what, and then go, okay, these should be good.
So you don't.
But I don't know. I guess if you're a Lantern Control player, you'd think that's awesome.
Let the good times continue to roll. So you wouldn't be wanting to ban something then in this to make this not a deck.
No, I like more decks. The more decks for me, the more cards I get to see. As soon as stuff starts getting banned, people get a bit edgy. When I watch Magic videos, I pick to watch drafts, usually an OSV draft, because that's my format, that's what I like to watch.
Yeah.
I watch Pro Tours and I watch GP coverage, and I'm there checking what cards are being played so I can keep track of prices and what I need to be picking up. The gameplay, the second part of it, on constructed tournaments for me.
Yeah.
So it's not going to affect me. I barely play Modern. If I do, I dust off my old zombie deck. Especially now Dredge is out of the picture. Whee! Oh, that's not there. No Dredge. Of course, that's because Grave Troll got banned, but re-banned. Yeah, so I can dust off my zombies again because no one's bringing Graveyard Hate. Actually, I've just seen there's a Graph Tickers cage in the main board of Lantern Control.
Yeah.
God damn it!
Ware of invention that they can tutor up their things.
If people decide they love Wigan so much that they all have to play Lantern Control, which is a possibility, and learn the deck and play it well, then they'll have to ban it. But until that day, it's just a different deck to play, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't like to play against it, but no. I don't like to play against any control deck. I was watching one of our store judges has picked up Jeskai Control, so I keep shouting abuse at him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's playing elves. And he's playing against elves, of course. I like creature-based decks. I really like attacking creatures. That's how I play Magic.
Hmm.
I'm just there, okay. Run a control player! Stop it!
Oh, I bet he loves you for that.
See, so, yeah, I'm probably biased. Well, actually, no, fuck it, ban it. Ban the whole lot. All control decks should be banned.
Excellent. So that's really and truly, that's the only response I really wanted to hear from you.
Oh, sorry, I went a long way to get there.
No, it's
fine. I had to work myself up to it and get really frustrated. I just hate playing against control decks. It was like, it's so depressing.
Yep.
Really, the only one having fun is the control player.
Big time.
And that's only if you're not a really big pile of salt and make sure they have a bad time as well.
Maybe that's that. You got to go, maybe going about it all wrong. Every time you lose the control, you've just got to turn into that pillar of salt and just be like...
Just scoop, just go. As soon as they start, as soon as they go island, go scoop. They go, oh, do you not want to play it? No.
Not against you. Not against you, you stupid control deck.
I mean, I obviously went into modern without many good cards. So the deck I went and played for like a good year was Night Tribal, which was quite fun. It got better and worse depending on the meta and whatever. And that's quite fun. And I noticed very early on that just by having a deck that people didn't recognise gave me a big advantage, particularly at big tournaments. I remember there's one guy, I can't remember his name, but I tend to see him, like, I think he lives in London, but I think I always see him at every PPTQ in Sussex. But he still remembers, like, 3 years ago, the first PTQ at that stage, I went to, he still remembers losing to, like, he was like, what is this, like, Boros, like, stuff? I was like, no, it's Night Tribal. And he still was, like, really salty, because I think he had, like, what deck was it? It was like, a well-known deck. It was, like, I don't know, like, red, blue, like, burn or control or something. Mm. And I just won, just because he didn't know what the deck was, and he was like, oh, you know, burn this knight. And I was like, oh, no, it's got, like, protection from red spells, or, you know, that kind of nonsense. I just won as a result of that, and I just, you know, I like the fact that modern is so ranged and varied in terms of like what you can field, but unfortunately people just obviously field whatever's most competitive. And I like making, as have gathered from listening to the podcast, I like looking up or making ridiculous brews, because you can with modern. And I like when situations arise in tournaments where you win because you've got some ridiculous thing the opponent can't anticipate.
Yeah,
because although obviously, you know, in a competitive field, you can't say it's not a factor at all. I don't like that. Just anticipating what the opponent's playing gives you kind of an edge, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I kind of just like people coming up with what they come up with and playing them, but unfortunately, it's a net negative thing. So you have to anticipate stuff. But I just like that doing well. And if this is going to put pressure on people to be a bit more different, I just kind of like what modern might turn into in that case.
Yeah, definitely. Speaking of interesting brews, there was something that you'd mentioned that you'd come up with in standard as well.
I can't take the credit for this one.
Oh, okay.
It was an MTG Goldfish article, which I'll send to you so you can link it. But I do want to talk about it because it is very interesting. Basically, there's an infinite combo in standard. I mean, there are technically a few if you go into some real corner stuff. But it's effectively three cards, but you need four to make it infinite. You can easily win with the three parts of the combo. Because standard at the moment has lots of tutor effects, like, you know, the forerunner cycles, like forerunner of the coalition that's the pirate one, or forerunner of the legions of vampires. You can actually look up combo pieces a lot easier. So although you look at it and go, wow, a 3/4 card combo, this is just not reasonable, it's actually more doable than you'd expect.
Yeah.
And I do want to take it to an event at some point because it just seems quite fun. But let's go into some detail about it. So basically, it revolves around a card that's a bit unusual, which is Oathsworn Vampire, which is a uncommon from Rivals. 1/1 black, and it's a 2/2 that comes into play tapped. But if you've gained life this turn, you can cast it from your graveyard. So, cool, you know, a bit like Scrapheap Scrounger, you know, the other stuff that comes back from the graveyard tap, whatever, it's nothing special. But the key to this is that it counts as casting, not like an ability. So what you do is you run this with Bontu's Monument, which makes black creature spells cost 1 less. So as long as you've gained life, you, of course, can effectively cast this guy from your graveyard for 1 black mana rather than black and 1. Also, a fun thing about Bontu's Monument is when you do cast a creature spell, you drain the opponent for 1 life, so you gain 1, they lose 1, which, of course, as long as you've gained life previously, or you cast a creature previously, of course, you can then cast this guy from the graveyard to get even more life, or obviously to drain the opponent. Then you combine this with a way to get mana, so you can keep doing this, and that is in the form of Pitiless Plunderer, which is a pirate, which is 4 mana, so 3 black, for 1/4. Whenever another creature you control dies, you make a treasure. So hopefully you can see what you do is, whenever this vampire guy dies, you get a treasure. And now, because he only costs 1, you can use that treasure to cast him again. So all you need now is a sacrifice out there, and you've got an infinite combo.
Yeah.
So the sacrifice, like I said, you can do this with 3. So if you just had those 3 cards, what you would do is you just keep doing it like a couple of times each turn and just kill it by normal means, or, you know, find some other way or block with it or whatever. But yeah, you want to sacrifice out there. So you have Yeheni Undying Partisan, which many people will know, which you can sacrifice to give him an instructor to end of turn. Or a slightly less good version is a card called Defiant Salvager, which is an uncommon, which again is 3 mana, You can sacrifice a creature to put a 1/1 counter on it. It's less good because it's only sorcery speed. Well, yeah, it is, whatever.
Yeah.
But effectively, you just sacrifice the Yotor Vampire to one of those creatures. He goes in the bin, you get a treasure, you cast it from the graveyard for one by sacrificing the treasure, you drain the opponent for one life, you keep doing that, you win the game. So that is the infinite combo, which is quite fun. And then the deck itself, as I said, runs like a couple of forerunners, so you can look for the relevant pirate or the relevant vampire. It also runs cards like Mastermind's Acquisition, which is a 4-mana demonic cheater, but you can also look into your sideboard for a card. So you, what you do is you put like one Yeheni in your sideboard, so you give yourself more options. And just generally give yourself ways of getting there faster. Like it runs Dusk Legion Zealot, which is a 2-mana vampire that comes in and you lose one life and draw a card just to get there faster. But literally, although it sounds like a bit unreasonable, this 3 or 4 card combo, I haven't played it at an event yet, but every sort of, goldfish kind of test hand I've done, you do get there like by turn 4, turn 5, like quite consistently, which is a bit crazy, and I do want to give it a go because it's just ludicrous. And when your opponent's like, oh, are you playing like what, Vampire Tribal kind of thing? I'm like, no, you'll see. And then and the thing is, I think I did it to you when I saw you the other day. I even showed like these cards in person to someone. I said, oh, this is an Imba combo, and I had to explain exactly why. Like, they got like how half of it worked, but normally people miss the fact that Bonte's Monument makes the guy cost one less.
Yeah.
And that you can obviously loop that. Then normally it's like, oh yeah, cool, you can do that a few times then. But then, like, oh no, he costs one, he counts as casting. Yeah, it's just fun. So I want to give this a go.
I think it looks awesome. The thing I was thinking of about it, so staring at the list, I'm thinking maybe you don't need it because you've got Mastermind's Acquisition where you can just straight up tutor. Yes. But if you really want to go hard on the combo, like assembling the combo, I was thinking about Treasure Mage. Is it that one? No, Trophy Mage.
Yeah, you can look for Bonte's Monument, yeah.
There's another thing, but I don't know if you'd need that.
Yeah, I literally, on my tapped out one, I have got Trophy Mage in the Navy Board. It runs white, literally, for Forerunner of the Legion. It has no other white cards, so that's
the
Vampire. There is an argument for it, because I was thinking of taking it out, is because the sideboard is very heavily white, because you get Authority of the Console with Ixalan Binding, Serenity, that kind of stuff. So I might take white out, but I was thinking, well, there's no real advantage to playing Mono Black. And then splashing blue would mean that I've got a thing to look up pirates, a thing to look up vampires, and then a thing to look up Bonte's Monument. But, you run four and you've got stuff to draw. You do tend to get there. But I had the same thought as well, because I've got a modern deck I was experimenting with that looks for a Ketra's Monument. But obviously, all the monuments cost 3 mana, so Trophy Mage is a good choice.
Yep.
But yeah, I had that thought, but I'm glad you came to the same conclusion as well.
Well, the other thing that it, in my head, it opens up a bit as well, is cards like Strategic Planning or Charter Course. There's another card. So basically, you can draw through, you can tear through your library, but also put pieces that you want in the graveyard as well.
I like that.
Like the Oathsworn Vampire.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of that blue gives you. And you could even go full on with it and then play something like Liliana or Scarab God. And then you've got ways, it's just more redundancy then of getting the creatures back. Because obviously, people will just go, okay, with your one trigger at trigger on the stack or whatever, I'll just fatal push your trick. So now you can't combo off. And then next turn you can go, right, okay, fine, cast Liliana, bring him back. And you're like, what?
Yeah. As I said, with the advantage of having your heavy rock to find salvagers, obviously you can respond, which is quite nice.
Yeah, that's true.
But other than that, you are right, obviously you can interrupt the combo. But I think, unless the opponent's extremely observant and has seen this, or listened to the podcast, I think they won't see the combo coming. Because by itself, it does look like Vampire Tribal. And then you slam down, probably Bonte's Monument, I think, would probably be the key piece. And then as long as they let it resolve, then you can just do whatever. So.
Yeah. Well, white, I tell you what, white, I don't know if I'm going a bit too deep with it, but I was thinking white would give you Refurbish in case they kill the Monument, but maybe I'm just overthinking it.
That's not bad. If you're milling yourself, maybe that's not bad.
Mm.
But I like that. I mean, I've just come from obviously Godfrey's Gift.
Yeah.
And I don't think it can do very well at the moment because of the amount of graveyard hate. There's that new thing that stops stuff from being targeted in the graveyard. The braids are everywhere at the moment. I don't think it's worth playing the deck. And like, I saw several people playing it at Standard Showdown and they just did terribly.
More or less.
So I kind of like that there is so much graveyard interaction, like Charter Course, whatever, and this seems a bit more stable because, with Corfeo's Kids, you have to get to go to combat, and then you have to do several to kind of win the game. Well, if they hadn't abrade, you just wait for them to try and abrade, and you cop off. So you know, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I'm pleased that they've printed adequate graveyard hate, because I just think back to the days when Rally the Ancestors was the best deck, and it was mainly because there was pretty much nothing that stops.
Yeah.
Like the grave, so it was just like, at least they haven't like created this format where you can abuse the graveyard, and then we've got absolutely no way of stopping it, and it's just,
yeah,
which is much cleverer. But no, I like this is awesome. And the other thing I just thought of as well is blue could give you the option of negates in the sideboard, because obviously control versus combo could be a bit miserable. But no, I like it. I think it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's I mean, I just love Energy Goldfish because it comes up with some real crazy stuff for both modern and for standard.
Mm.
And I particularly like it when it comes up with like normally budget modern decks. And some of them are just like hilarious. And, you know, again, this guy working if I stand it. But I'm like, oh, I saw this budget deck. It's like $20. You can get like this green red aggro deck. It looks like hilarious. I think you could actually win because no one knows what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just love giving this information to people that actually might want to try and get into modern, because, like, speaking from experience, you can do well with really budget decks sometimes, as long as you pick the right kind of unusual deck.
Yeah. As I said before, as long as you're trying something that is powerful, then, yeah, you can totally do that.
So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. Follow the group and keep up to date with whenever we are sending out podcasts. We can also be found on the MTGCast network. That is mtgcast.com, as well as our own podcast website, which is glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then please check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, which you can find in the description below, or search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
Take care.
See you later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so the question I want to ask you, I asked Grant this as well.
Well, Grant, who's sitting with us.
Grant right there, who's choosing at this moment not to say anything.
I think you failed in your mission.
It's fine. I'm going to edit this later.
Bit of editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grant,
what's your opinion? I was playing this on the GP day two, and they're just playing a side event, and we're into round. Was it round two? Yeah, it's round two. I'd mulled to five, and I was like, oh, I've got to keep. It's got two drops in, a three drop, a four drop, which is a ramp card as well, and a big creature, but no lands.
Mm.
I'm like, oh, well, I get a scry, so I don't want to go to four. It's only game one. I can try and pick up. If it goes bad, I just pick up another two games. Or I'll keep. I go, oh shit, I'm on the play.
No. Oh no.
Oh, it's great fun.